Welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 56. This week we have Kirk Pettis, Danny Ng, and myself, Eric Taylor. We'll be discussing the Spanish government or lack thereof. Over the last year, they were without a strong coalition government or a government of any sort for about 11 months. So we'll discuss that and I'm sure much more. Maybe the deep state, right, Kirk? It sounds like
That's
that's
right.
something that you might want to go to.
You know, how do you guys choose, how do we choose this topic at first, anyways?
Well, after the last podcast, we were discussing future topics, and the last we've had, I think, three or four within the last year or so podcasts, and none of them have had a topic. So Kirk threw it out there. He's like, "Well, we seem to have done pretty well without a government. Let's give that a try since we haven't really gone with the topic forever." So that's how we landed on this. You been doing, Danny? We haven't talked to you in a while, right?
How am I doing?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty swell. So yeah, I made out of the public accounting world and back in the private. So I think it's been a while since I've been in a podcast like this because of the long hours, and just glad to kind of have that flexibility. So so I'm doing pretty well now. So I think kind of got my got my life back a little bit, and so pretty good. So yeah, how about you guys?
I'm good. Work life's going well.
Fantastic.
I'm thinking about moving back to Chanhassen. I'm looking at actually looking at a place soon over there in Lotus Lake. So I might,
Ooh.
I don't know.
Wait, so where do you
See.
live right now?
Are you
I'm
gonna have a still in my.
dock?
I'm in Minnetonka. Am I gonna
You're
have a dock?
Minnetonka. Wait, so are you
A dog
still
or a
living
dock?
the same house the
A dock.
last time I were there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a nice area, though. I mean, why do you want to move away from there?
Maybe downsize a little bit,
Yeah.
possibly.
Get like a dock so then Kirk can go fishing and then have a beer and drink every night and then, so.
It's,
Right.
we'll see.
It's a possibility.
It could happen.
It could happen.
Yeah.
Anyways, so it's good to see you, Danny.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. So, yep.
But how about this Spain?
Yeah, so they kind of, like all, it seems like a lot of governments and situations, they just couldn't get a prevailing coalition put together. So they're the two dominant pieces in Spain, or have been kind of a left progressive coalition and a more conservative coalition, and neither of which for quite some time could jockey enough people within the legislature to get a prime minister in place. And I think there was a lot of political tumult because of the high unemployment rate, specifically within Spain. A lot of their, especially younger people, were just unemployed. I think it was like 25, 26% of the population
I
when
think
you
it's
have
higher than
kind of,
that.
it was, all those numbers are government numbers, right? So this is
Well, I think their
too.
overall unemployment is about that high, isn't it? I
Yeah,
didn't think that was just the young.
we can
But.
dig into that a little bit. But they had, generally high unemployment, so a lot of discord, which resulted in the government essentially not functioning, or at least the state government for, or
Yeah,
the
this
central
wasn't a
state
cause
government
of
for
no
a year.
government. This unemployment was already a precursor,
Precruiser?
prerequisite. It was there, like you're saying. It's
Yeah.
just disdain towards both parties, and no party gains a foothold. But when I first heard about this Spain thing, it's like, I don't know how it's happened, but how cool would it be if you actually had were able to vote for no government for the next term? Instead of having to have a stalemate, if there was actually a voting option that says, yeah, let's just go with no government this time around.
Can we do that for our election here?
Then I would maybe vote this time around. But
Yeah,
you're still
I don't.
voting, right?
No,
Next Tuesday.
No, I'm not gonna vote.
You got, but you got to. I mean, it's like, because like the, you know, men in the country, you know, passed and the Constitution and people died so we could get this, you know, get the right to vote. I mean, you can vote for Mickey Mouse or whoever, but you know, it should still go out for go out there and get the vote because you know you got the right to do so.
I am voting by not voting. I find it disdainful. Don't agree with either party, the main two parties.
To vote for either party. You can vote for like someone else.
No,
like
Gary. I guess my main opponent or main reasoning would be that I don't think it's right to go and vote a leader to tell your neighbor what you can and cannot do, because no one's going to vote what they can't do themselves. It's all about opposing people or your neighbors. And I don't believe that that was what people died for to create in this country. And so by me abstaining from voting is far more meaningful to me than going and voting for individuals to be our so-called leaders. I for what? And that's why Spain is relative to me, that, and why I said, you know, deep state might come into conversation, because really I feel that all Spain has done is revealed that really it's the deep state that runs the government. There is still a government in Spain, and it still runs functional without a so-called leader or a party to lead it. But the government is still fully functioning. It's just not expanding.
It's very much in play all around. So you're basically, Kirk, you're going to join the 40% of the population that's not going to, or eligible of the voting population that's not going to vote. Looking at, I think the high water mark for a presidential election and voter participation, it's been like 63%. There's a good amount of people that just don't do it, and people like you could hand this election to Donald Trump.
I think people just don't give a flying.
What's that?
I just don't think people actually care and don't pay attention why most people don't vote. I wish it was 40% that viewed life as I did, or government as I did, that did not vote because of that. But I could not say that I am part of the 40% because of, I think people think the way I do.
Well, I'm going to go out and vote because it's, you know, it's a right that has been given to us, and you know, it's a system that we're in today that we're able to do, you know, I'm not going to vote for either the Republicans or Democrats, but you know, just going out there, just kind of, you know, I feel like it kind of represents what America has given us today. So I'm going to vote, whether you like it or not.
Hey, I'm not telling you shouldn't.
And I know you don't care, but... So, Eric,
I have no problem with you voting at all. I'm sure you both
will. Plus, I want the I voted sticker.
We're that proud.
And sorry, Eric, I didn't mean to interrupt you so much as I did, but I...
You're passionate about your non-participation in this election. I can see that.
No, but actually, I am passionate about it. I hear people down Trump, I find it boils something up to defend the guy. I don't know what it is. I'm not really a supporter of the guy, but you know, it's when I hear everyone downplay him, I want to ask about why.
Maybe you just like to cheer for the underdogs, and that's kind of what Trump is right now.
He's what?
He's an underdog.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Am I fueling your fire right now?
Oh, man. All right, let's talk about Spain.
Let's talk about Spain. We can get back to deep state and
Donald
Trump.
Yeah, we can get back to this later.
Beating a dead horse. Actually, he's not really that dead of a horse, is he? He could end up winning the election because of people like you who don't vote.
Specifically, I still think he's going to be a landslide victor. What can I say?
Well, there's a lot of... I think there's more discontent on the progressive liberal side than people account for. You know, especially in the African-American community, some of the minority communities who may not come in and vote, and that could flip things. The fact that people, like you're saying, you kind of embody that pretty well, Kirk. People, you don't get the, when you talk to like Clinton supporters, you don't get that fire. But when you talk to Trump supporters, it's like they're all in. They're either in or they're all in, and they're pretty much all in. So there's a lot of people could come out of the woodwork who haven't voted at all in the past, and God forbid that guy could be the president of the United States. That'll be great.
Well, see, I don't even fear. You know, who knows? He could be bad, but our government is set up. I have faith in the way our government's set up.
Absolutely. There's some good checks and balances.
I don't fear a so-called tyrant. I fear a tyrant of Hillary's stature, because everyone just follows her, because who knows why. One reason would be possibly just because it's so corrupt. But it's if you really want a tyrant, I would say go ahead and vote for Hillary, because every bit of government just follows her along, like whatever she says. So to me, that's far more tyrant than Trump could ever be.
Mm-hmm. All right, so back to Spain. So they were shut down for 11 or so months. Basically, like you're saying, Kirk, there was no federal policy or anything that really was enacted, because there is no ability to pass legislature to fund a lot of federal government organizations, but things still kind of went on. And I have some, you know, I have some clips that we could play or not play that kind of give an overview of what happened there. So people, you know, the water still ran, electricity still was there. And, you know, in some instances, I think a lot of what filled in the gaps was voluntary association. And, you know, neighbors just helping other neighbors out, some things that didn't take place. And I think that's one of the reasons why you brought it up, right, Kirk, is the fact that even though you had a crippled government, like you termed, the deep state did function, which is kind of a amalgamation of, you know, the various services that a government typically provides. And that still worked. It was maybe a little hindered, but it still, you know, things still operated. And, it's kind of a
well, let me ask you something. Right? How far did you research it? Because to me, the federal government, or the so-called similar to our country, would be the federal government, would they still had elections. Everyone was
they
still
did.
Voted
they
in.
Had multiple
There's
elections.
Just no majority.
Right.
And so yep. What – so is that what – I mean, in America here, all you would be constantly hearing is, oh, you know, the Republicans aren't working with the Democrats, or, you know, is the Democrats aren't working with the Republicans. So what is that not being said in Spain, or is that just how, all right,
no,
since
people
no
are very
clear
much aware
majority,
of that.
We just don't have a so-called president or prime minister. And, you know, so obviously nothing is there nothing that the two parties could ever agree upon, or the three parties, however many, you know, organizations Spain control or has. But do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
That
yeah,
it's still a functioning entity. It just doesn't have a. I mean. To me, the whole concept of saying that Spain doesn't have a government is saying because they don't have a so-called dictator to tell them what they can and cannot do, that the country can't go in any direction. And to me, it's
you can
folly
read that
for
bit of
us libertarians to fall into this trap of saying that, oh, Spain doesn't have a government, you know, rah, 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 Spain. Because when we hear it doesn't, it's easy to be excited about it. But
sure.
To me, it just seems that
well,
something
I mean,
doesn't
like,
feel right about it.
Well, I mean, like, the, you know, the it's not, even though, like, there isn't, like, a true leadership for, like, the 10, 11 months, you know, the police is still there, public transit and all that, you know, all those basic government running functions are still going on. It's just that, you know, maybe just for, like, you know, you just don't hear about the radio or, you know, news saying that, you know, the prime minister is there to make these big decisions and all that. So, but, you know, life still moves on. I mean, as you can see, it's evident with, like, the increased growth from quarter to quarter. So, yeah. I don't know if that's kind of where you're trying to get at, Kirk.
Kind of. It just doesn't smell good, in my opinion, just of how, once I started looking into it, how, all right, that's why, in a way, when we hear they don't have a functioning government, it's like people voted that in, but they didn't vote that in. They voted up their representation, in a sense, or just however it is that certain amount of votes cast enact this many politicians. But to say that just because they don't have a majority, they can't get things done, or they don't have a functional government, is to me just besides the point.
All right, so I pasted a article in the chat. I can read the article. It's rather short. That kind of this is from Newsmax. It kind of gives an overview, and it's about a month old, and it kind of dovetails into exactly what you're both are saying, actually. So this shouldn't take me any longer than 2 minutes, I don't think, to read. And it gives us a good overview and kind of corroborates what we're talking about. So I'll start here. Spain hasn't had an elected national government for almost a year, and many of its residents are okay with that. It would be just fine if we got rid of most of the politicians and three-fourths of the government employees, Rafael Navarro of Madrid told the New York Times, as he, like other newspaper interviewed, believe that it's better to have too little government than too much. Spain has not had elected officials now for 288 days, as after two national elections in 6 months and a third vote expected in December, the country has not had a party winning enough seats to form a government. And in the first time in the country's 40 years since it formed a modern democracy, a caretaker government is in charge. Saturday, a socialist leader, Pedro Sanchez, resigned in hopes of opening the way for conservative Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy and his popular party to be reelected. However, Spaniards have not suffered from the lack of government leaders, as budget money is still being spent and the government ministries are in charge. There hasn't been a government shutdown, and services such as garbage collection, law enforcement, and public transportation haven't been disrupted. And if there is no government in place when the national 2016 budget expires, those in charge will use the old budget as the new one for 2017. Spain's gridlock began last October when Rajoy called a general election. His party won the most votes in December and June, but didn't win a majority and now holds 137 out of the Spanish parliament's 137 seats. That doesn't seem right in the article. The country's economy is thriving, though especially through its tourism industry, but voters have already voted twice and may not feel like voting again. It's like Groundhog's Day every day, Pedro Rodriguez, an assistant professor of international relations in Madrid, told the Times. Meanwhile, Manuel de la Rocha Vasquez, a socialist party economist, said Spain has become polarized to the point that there are only insults and blame and arrogance. Also, Spain could face issues with the European Commission if it can't bring its debt under control. It faces a fine of about $5.6 billion if it doesn't hit the year's deficit target, and cutbacks put in place by the nation's caretaker government are hindering many government agencies. So that's kind of an overview of this, and I'm sure you guys are probably aware of the fact that Spain was a part of that coalition, which are called the PIGS, in the last economic downturn. So that's Portugal, India, Greece, and Spain, and they're heavily in debt. Specifically, they're in debt to the northern countries in the European Union, which has brought on, you know, the dominating conservative aspect of government. And then you have the progressive side, which is popular with a lot of the people because of the fact that they've had pretty high unemployment. That unemployment has come down significantly. The aggregate number 2 years ago was 25%. It's now around 16%, according to the government. And this last election, conservative side won, which was a couple weeks ago. They have a prime minister, so they're functioning. So yeah, like you're saying, Kirk, that deep state was working, but a lot of services that weren't required weren't provided, and which a lot of people thought was, you know, more than fine.
Yeah, which is a good something I would view as good. So, yeah, there are good things about it, for sure.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys this. Do you really believe it's mostly the lack of government that is kind of driving this growth, or maybe there's other outside factors that might be stimulating this growth? I mean, we look around Europe, you know, currently the oil prices are all-time lows. making, traveling affordable and things like that, which kind of, in a sense, with oil prices being low, people have more money in their pockets to consume more. And, I think I read somewhere in the news article that, consumer spending has been growing, which could be, one of the factors that drive the economy, as well as, interest rates still being low right now. So these are outside factors, but do you think maybe these things are playing a bigger role into it, or really is it just lack of government that is the answer?
Well, from what I've seen, it's a combination of consumer growth, which is tightly correlated with the increase, because their biggest industry is tourism, which has been significantly growing as the European and global economy in general has recovered from the, or has quote unquote uncovered from the last Great Recession. So you have that in play. And so you have those dollars coming in, creating jobs, consumer growth growing as a result. So I don't even, from what I've seen, that it's the government really hasn't played much of a factor into that either way. That's more, rather than a micro situation, it's more of a global macro environment where you have those tourist dollars coming into the country.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Spain is a huge tourist. I think it was like a huge record of tourism this past, like this during the summer. So.
Right.
So that's probably what's driving it.
Yeah. So like in many, many situations when you're talking about countries or states or whatever, you have, it's a multi-layer situation, it's economic and government. A lot of the times they just don't fully mesh. I think we probably, all of us would be pretty critical of government being able to, maybe you guys can come up with specific examples, government being able to actually stimulate growth, real long-term growth. I don't know, maybe with the exception of China, there aren't many examples of that, right?
Oh, no, you just look at Obamacare. I mean, it's a good example that doesn't really work.
Yeah. So, Kirk, do you have any other kind of Spanish thoughts? As that was kind of your baby, or your idea? I shouldn't say baby, but that's what you wanted to discuss.
My problem is I read too many articles. I keep wanting to bring up other points, but I'm like, oh, yeah, that's from it's a totally different topic. I'm getting things crossed up, topics I was going to bring up, but trying to think of what else here. I think it's a good just – perception on how the direction of the world is going from Brexit to the rise of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and Spain's no functional government, while it's not that it's only had one election. How many elections is it now that it's been, kind of?
Well, the third was the charm.
Towards conservative.
Yeah. The last, party. Which was 2 weeks ago, that's what put in place an actual legislature and prime minister.
So, and by that swing also, I mean, that's obviously, as us all being liberty-minded, we believe government expenditures spend too much. And with how vast the debt was in Spain, to move towards a conservative view would be, kind of seems like should be a given if people are, starting to try and be a little more conscious about their money spending. But so as a broad sense, it was definitely a plus. I just, it's definitely strange to see a country, a Western civilized country, enact no government, and for just a difference in how they're structured to not have a legislature unless they had the majority, but which makes it very, I don't know, how many parties were there? I mean, one, two, I mean, obviously there's more than two, but.
No, there's many. There are,
yeah, it seemed like
four,
there's many,
major,
so.
Four major parties that were in play, and that contributed to the deadlock. So basically you had far left progressive, far right conservative, and then moderate progressive, moderate conservative. And these parties made it difficult to attain the number in the legislature to control the government, and they couldn't, as a result, elect a prime minister from the dominant coalition. So they kept, it essentially created gridlock. And it's a function of the fact that you have this polarization of the country, you know, the conservative side, and then the economic downturn, or the almost the depression that took place in Europe, that put so many people out of work, that is able to kind of stratify the electorate, so they couldn't get anything in place. It was so evenly distributed. You know, typically you have, and we're having kind of the same thing. Well, you have, I would guess we're going to have the same thing in this election, where it's very close. You know, even in the U.S. election, people, I'm sure maybe you guys have noticed this or seen it, there's a chance that either Clinton or Trump may not get the amount that they need to get the election through the Electoral College. There's some scenarios where that potentially neither one of them could get elected. So it would be somewhat similar in that regard to Spain. Now, if Gary Johnson wins New Mexico, then you have Evan McMillan, who's essentially a never Trump guy that Romney in that camp has brought into play, an ex-CIA operative.
That's the Constitution Party, right?
He's independent.
Out of Utah.
No, he's independent. He's only on 11 state ballots. He's from Utah. He's a Mormon. He very well could win that state.
He says he's up to like over 30 now.
Is he up over 30? Okay.
Yeah, and if he's predicting he's going to be into the 40s by election day.
Yeah, it's kind of the – I really believe that that's the never Trump or the neoconservative wing of the Republican Party trying to prevent
Trump.
Oh,
he said it on YouTube. Or
he did? Okay.
Somewhere that, yeah, he was – his stated goal was to block Trump.
Yeah, so that's that aspect. So something like that could could play out even in our election. I think it's a long shot, but a Spain-like scenario as far as prime minister is concerned could play out. And what would happen, it was go to the House of Representatives to vote on the president. And I don't think that's happened in a really long time, but I've heard a few people mention that that's a kind of an outlier scenario.
It would be something to behold. And then the funny thing is, if that's a stalemate, then it goes to the vice president.
Is that how it works?
Vice president, which would be Sitting. Joe Biden.
Okay. Yeah, so we could be Spain. You never know.
You never know. And things could be tied up in court forever. I mean, with Project Veritas, like we talked about before, and who knows what can happen come election day. But... you know, one thing I did want to bring up about Spain is, what do you think about the economy growing? Where this happens and the unemployment goes down, the economy grows. And the same thing has been said about Britain as well.
Oh, you're saying the less the government's involved, then, you know, that might play into the increase in tourism, the increase in economic growth? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. To where, things have been looking better. It's that by the pause and the new regulations, possibly, I don't know how tied into the EU and, you know, if that's still all.
They're very tied into
the
EU.
Just, what?
They're very tied into the EU and they're very in debt.
Yeah. So I don't know if, you know, so how relevant is a Spanish government then as well when, you know, they're tied into the EU? Obviously, Britain had to go through their own government to out themselves from the EU. So that's one way to differentiate themselves. But where does, you know, I guess I'm not totally clued in on how EU regulations dictate to what a country can and cannot do, if it is because of trading across borders, or if it is even within their own city or state governments.
I got something. This is a CNN Money article. Again, this is shorter, so I should be able to whip this out in 2 minutes. Gridlock in parliament means Spain has only a caretaker government. Voters face a third general election and quick succession later this year. But in the meantime, the economy is moving along quite nicely. Economic reforms introduced by former Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy have helped the country bounce back from a serious recession. The changes made it easier for companies to hire and fire and set wages. Plus, government spending in many areas has continued unabated because no one has the authority to rein it in. That's kind of counter to what we've discussed, right? That could mean trouble ahead as borrowing rises, but for now it's helping. So government spending actually gone up without government to rein it in, according to this article. Not only has the economy been on autopilot, but it's gotten a boost from the fact that fiscal policy is looser than it otherwise should have been, said Stephen Brown, a European economist at Capital Economics in London. Spain is having a great year for tourism, with visitor numbers up 11% in the first 7 months of the year. This is partly because tourists are avoiding France, Turkey, and Egypt, which have all suffered a series of terrorist attacks. The influx of tourists has created more jobs. Unemployment recently dipped below 20% after peaking above 26% in 2013. And jobs and tourism have offered lower-skilled workers a chance to find employment again. Brown estimates that the jump in tourism added nearly one percentage point to the Spanish growth. Spanish consumers are also feeling more confident about their finances, meaning they're more likely to spend. Rising employment certainly helps, and even though there's been limited wage growth, that's offset by falling oil prices, said Brown. On top of that, more people are taking out mortgages, encouraged by record low interest rates. The Spanish Mortgage Association recently reported that new mortgages for homes were up 24% in the first half of 2016 compared to the same period in 2015. So it looks like there is a confluence of events. You know, government spending.
It sounds like more of the same, yeah.
Yeah, government spending didn't even go down. It went up because there weren't checks and balances in place. So I would imagine now they're going to even have more of a debt problem with the EU.
Yeah, it sounds like there's inflating a bubble.
Yeah, is this what it sounds like?
And so that could just go into the whole cause of the EU and the most of Europe is just a huge bubble just waiting to bust.
That could be a mess.
Now it's coming back to me. An article I read a while ago about this was I thought there was some Spanish rule or I can't remember if it was Spain or not, but where if you wanted to let someone go from a company, mm-hmm. it was like 3.5 years you had to pay them afterwards for letting them go.
I think it was 42 months or something like that.
In Spain?
Yeah,
now it's like
3.5 years.
Yeah, now it's
and
like
now it's
24.
Which is, yeah that's how they were praising that as a, a good thing where companies are more willing to hire someone. Like, are you kidding me? you want to let someone go and you still have to pay them for 2 years and that's considered a good thing?
Well, it's better than 3.5 years.
Well,
that's almost 50% savings,
ridiculous.
Right?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of.
I wonder if these people getting fired, if they still need to like report report that they're employed. I mean, how awesome it is like if I get another job and like the government still doesn't know and I'm still getting paid from my previous employer that fired me. I mean, double income, man.
Why wouldn't you? If you're unscrupulous.
Good luck. With that lack of innovation and entrepreneurial spirit, good luck finding another job.
But if you're an unscrupulous individual, you could tank your job, get fired, get another job, and essentially get double paid for a couple of years.
Or just have a vacation for 3.5 years and get paid for doing nothing, and then get another job.
Yeah. Get fired from 10 jobs.
You're going to go for CPA job in Spain pretty soon, Danny?
Yeah, I'm thinking about applying citizenship there.
So as an entrepreneur, why would you ever start a business unless you have a politician to pay off, which will ensure your success of your business or at least a market share?
Why wouldn't you be an entrepreneur? That's my entrepreneurial strategy.
Unless you just have that extra more faith. To roll the dice and to start a business and just shoot for your dreams, that's far different to do in Spain than it is in America.
No, absolutely.
Still, even today, regardless of how bad we are. But that's why Europe, when you hear stuff like this, it's I can't even relate to it. I don't even want to relate. I don't see how our government wants to relate with this mentality in Europe. It should be so foreign of a mindset. And then with the influx of the, what France is going through right now and Germany, I don't see how things are ever going to get better in the next decade.
It's a tough situation in Europe in general, because you have kind of the stratification. So you have, you know, as we've looked into Spain more, you have this social safety net that I'm sure is abused substantially, which is why you've had the kind of the issue with the political sphere in general. You have a conservative side that's trying to assert itself, I imagine, repeal a lot of this stuff in order to become more economically competitive to pay down debt to the EU. And then you have the other side, the progressive side, where you have a lot of people are unemployed, so they want to make these controls tighter. So you have this, you know, this just gridlock, which most likely manifests itself in the lack of government, right? And neither side could get, you know, could get enough votes to get their side in power. But, you know, throughout the Euro, you have just such economic disparity between the North and South side, and trying to hold it all together with the Euro and the way that they've been doing things. It's going to be very interesting to see how that coalition holds together. I think UK really made a good call in just getting out, or the citizens there are a lot smarter than people give them credit for, you know, for getting out of that situation, because it could be a tough road to hoe in, you know, in the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, and I don't know, did you listen to No Agenda a few times ago?
I haven't listened to it in a couple of weeks. So give
All
us,
right, I'm gonna send you over a link to play.
Okay. It's a shorter
Anyways,
one.
Anyways.
Yeah, just put it in the chat.
But anyways, so what was I gonna say? It's pretty interesting how bad Europe looks, in my opinion. When you look into this stuff and you see the unemployment and the measures of what it takes, and we're, you know, just think of how many people are on the government dole. What we talk about, the tipping point in America went over, you know, 50%, or whenever you could say, let's say 60% of the population votes, even 31% could all of a sudden control, be the majority factor of America in acting their own laws, and which,
well, it's 30%
would be
now,
the nightmare
really
of Spain.
Well, it's 25 to 30,
and there's that much. But do you not see my point, where how many people are on the government dole in Spain and want to see that the benefits that they get from it going to where,
yeah,
they
I think that,
are in gridlock?
I think that had a lot to do with the gridlock. You have you know the productive class in the economy who want to shed some of that regulation, and but you do have, you know, it's unfortunate. So maybe you have individuals who may not want to work, or you have individuals who can't work and they want a safety net. And, you know, as a result of really, in my mind, you know, leading up to 2008 and 2009, there was a lot of illegal activity that took place in the financial sector, a lot, especially in the hedge fund area, in the private equity area, mortgage area. A lot of it happened in Spain. I mean, their real estate market just tanked. And it was because of this blatant, you know, fraud and illegal activity that took place. I mean, if you want to really isolate it in Europe, it really kind of, the epicenter was London. It wasn't really, you know, it wasn't Frankfurt. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Belgium. It was London. A lot of fraudulent activity happened there that really affected countries like Spain. So, you know, a lot of these people who lost their homes and lost their jobs and saw industry get crushed. I mean, you have, it's not an easy political problem to resolve. I mean, you have every, and that's one of the, I think that's one of the purposes of government, or what should be the purpose, is to protect people's rights, to protect your sovereign rights from people who blatantly abuse the system. And I think that's a very good reason to have government. I mean, there are people who talk about we shouldn't have government. We should have, you know, voluntary associations and things like that. But that's a good system. If everybody is good, people aren't good out there. And especially when you get into finance, there's a lot of bad people there, and they need to be held accountable. So when you get in the progressive side, I can certainly understand the arguments on that side.
Yeah, well, I would argue that where there's a problem, there's a business solution.
Sometimes.
To where the competitive solution would hopefully be better if it was that bad that it would coalesce to fixing the solution. And over time, things just straighten out, in my opinion, that way. But
hate 72.
Yes.
You're not going to give me like a regular link. You're going to make me find it.
Yes.
Okay, go on while I try and do that.
Yeah. I forgot what I was talking about now.
Clips and stuff. And Euroland. Got it.
Little sign of Brexit. But so... Spain, I think we can agree, is a little different situation. Brexit is a far bigger deal than Spain not having a government for a year.
Well, the Brexit essentially is somewhat analogous to that, I think. I would argue that it is, because it basically, you know, if you think back to the Brexit, there is all this liberal media, you know, most of the media there has a liberal bias, saying that Brexit was going to be a no. It was going to be a no there, and it was a no in Scotland. But there was the conservative side, and people in this situation definitely lean more conservatives. Like, we don't want the legislative overbearance that's coming out of Brussels. We don't want to service the debt that a lot of the EU has to service because of the, you know, because of stratification. It really is a north-south stratification. You have strong North European countries. You have Germany, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, that are, you know, Netherlands, Belgium. But once you get kind of below that line, you have a lot of weak southern countries that are depending on the north, and they're heavily in debt. So there's a lot of friction there, and people are like, we don't want the EU regulating how we use our teapots, or saying we can't use our teapots and other things. All the legislative crap that's coming out of Brussels, and we don't want to support the EU or the euro or kind of the EU financial situation. So they got out of there. And you look at Spain, it's kind of the same thing, where you have a strong conservative side that essentially is trying to get control of government, and it now does have control, trying to kind of counteract that progressive side. So I think there are some parallels actually between the Brexit and what we're looking at with Spain.
Yeah, I guess, and it could be, yeah, that's the avenue Britain had to take, and the avenue Spain had to take is, you know, this way. So it could be the same thing, I guess, too. So
do you want me to play this clip?
Yeah, if you want to. It's just shows the counterintuitiveness and what prediction I wanted to make, that Britain would, England would start, their economy would be far better than the other nations in the EU.
How long is this?
I don't think it's that long.
Okay. I don't think I can see. Maybe I will. I'll click on it.
Britain is still waiting for the big downturn that was predicted after its vote to leave the European Union. Economic growth in the UK slowed only slightly in the 3 months after the referendum. Britain's Statistics Office said the economy grew by 0.5% in the July to September period. The services sector improved, but manufacturing, construction and agriculture all contracted. Brexit supporters said this shows the pre-vote predictions of a slump were scaremongering, but economists warned the real challenge is yet to come, as inflation shoots up and companies postpone investment. The Finance Minister, Philip Hammond, said this shows the resilience of Britain's economy, but he also warned of tougher times ahead, saying the government has to prepare to support the economy to make sure we get through this period of uncertainty as London readies for difficult Brexit negotiations. There was little reaction on the London Stock Exchange, and the pound gained slightly against the dollar. The International Monetary Fund has admitted that its warning of a post-Brexit vote financial crash was too pessimistic. It now believes that Britain will be the fastest growing of the G7 leading industrial nations this year, with 1.8% expansion dipping to 1.1% next year. And the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has similar forecasts. It too sees 1.8% growth this year and 1% growth next year, half of what it was originally predicting, and it too talks about a high level of uncertainty. The GDP growth numbers make it less likely the Bank of England will feel the need to cut interest rates further in order to stimulate the UK economy when its policymakers meet next week.
Don't laugh. Why are you laughing? Shut up.
So that's the little thing they just kind of gloss over.
Yeah, I love the bit how they say that IMF now says they're a bit pessimistic on the economic growth.
it's pretty funny.
Yeah, our PR campaign didn't work. Everything's going to be just fine.
But yeah, so and you know, that's why, you know, to tie this back into our election, that's why I think Trump is, you know, where he is today. And I think he talks about a lot about that sentiment of, I don't think he's the candidate we all want to see lead this charge. But I think there's enough Americans in this country that are leaning that direction, and Trump is their voice. And that's why I think he's going to win this election.
But yet, you're not voting for him.
Yeah, I'm not going to vote.
Bullshit!
Because of the whole, yeah, just it's too much mindset of telling your neighbors what they can and cannot do. And that's just what I want to protest against more than anything. And... Do you see what that other clip that would be great to play? I don't know how much time we have.
Oh, I didn't
left.
Even notice it. I was on autopilot. Is this under
It's under
the
same show. It's actually really quite funny. I'm sure you haven't heard that.
2016 elections. Michael Moore explains. Okay.
Yeah.
I can play it.
Donald Trump.
Let's go ahead and play it.
Let me preface it a little bit.
I did tie it into Donald Trump, so then to lead into this clip. So
explain the clip a little bit. So this is three and
this
a half
is I just listened to it today. I was on vacation all last week, and I was really behind in a lot of my favorite podcasts, and so I just listened to this one today, and I found this pretty surprising and kind of the same sentiments, even though Mike and Moore and I kind of are grossly in different mindsets. But there's a lot of crossover, and I think this clip highlights it.
Okay, let's do it.
Came to the Detroit Economic Club and stood there in front of the Ford Motor executives and said, if you close these factories as you're planning to do in Detroit and build them in Mexico, I'm going to put a 35% tariff on those cars when you send them back, and nobody's going to buy them. It was an amazing thing to see. No politician, Republican or Democrat, had ever said anything like that to these executives. And it was music to the ears of people in Michigan and Ohio.
I'm going to stop that real quick. Maybe, Danny, you have something to say about this. That's complete. That distorts the free market, and that could cause huge ramifications. I think what you're not including in the scenario is that if you allow the free market to take place, you can move these jobs and manufacture items and services at a more competitive rate. It actually decreases price of goods and services in the United States and increases the wealth quotient within those countries, and those countries and the citizens of those countries in turn will buy products from the United States. So it's a short-sighted protectionist policy that Moore is supporting. It's very progressive. It's very liberal. It's very not conservative. So I can see how he's supporting Trump. Anybody who's a libertarian or free market-based would completely disagree with what he's saying. And this is a reason not to vote for Trump in my mind if you're conservative. But Danny, you have anything to say about that, or should I just continue?
No, I pretty much kind of, you know, agree with that mindset. I mean, it's just that, you know, like when he said, like, the people of Michigan, you know, just really, really opened the ears. I mean, I kind of understand their point of view as well. I mean, a lot of these people live in Michigan, and their lot jobs and livelihood is, you know, produce vehicles all their lives. And, you know, I kind of get their standpoint of view as well, too. So, I mean, it's kind of like that. You know, that the other flip side, yeah, it's a great idea that the free market is, you know, if we can produce these cars at an area place that's cheaper, You know, definitely. But unfortunately, I mean, with, you know, with costs being so high because, you know, there's so much regulations, I'm sure, you know, things like that. It, you know, it's tough to say. I mean, you know, nothing's perfect. Free market would be great. But at the same time, you know, these people got to watch for their livelihoods and their family as well. And if, you know, they hear a leader that's willing to fight for them, like Trump, that, you know, if you're moving these factories to China or Mexico or, you know, wherever we're slapping a tariff, you know, people hear that and it's like, okay, this is a man of action. This is a man of, you know, reasoning, you know, that is on my side, that, you know, he wants to really protect jobs here. So, and I mean, it's, I can, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, not to say no to the guy who's, you know, that does sound like he's fighting for you.
I couldn't agree more with you guys. I mean, this is, that's exactly it. But this is why I say, I, many episodes I said that Donald Trump is the candidate, is the totally mind blank, FDR of the Republican Party when he's elected, of the things he's going to do that is supposedly the conservative right way, or just what the populace wants. And it's He's exactly what we talked about Spain, that where they're shooting themselves in the foot and making their own bubble worse. And that it's really the same mindset that it doesn't sound like it's going to succeed for what at least has it's been doing before the conservative, you know, party got elected. But do you see my point where that this is what America wants, is something, an action to be done, that they have a problem with the direction of the elites of the world, the way of the New World Order. And this is their avenue out, even though, but they're grasping to the wrong avenue, as what us libertarians would talk about. And I think that's what you, Eric, brought up, and Danny was referencing. But at the same time, like Danny was saying, that it's easy to see how people would want this kind of action done to preserve and protect supposedly their jobs in the marketplace. And it is, like you said, Eric, a totally false idea, ideal for the free market. And it's only going to make matters worse in America.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good policy. It's very detrimental to the U.S. economy, I would say. But I'll play the rest of this clip.
I think it'll be short-term beneficial. Long-term, probably bad. But
it's not good. Yeah. There's nothing. It's good for people who are looking for government protection of their jobs. In my opinion, you should have a level playing field, global playing field, compete for what you're looking to accomplish in any avenue, and not protect or play favorites. And this is essentially, and I can see why anytime, if you're a conservative or a libertarian, you start to see a far left individual like Michael Moore supporting a quote-unquote conservative candidate using this rationale should give you a little bit of pause, I think.
Well, but let me give you a hypothetical, though.
Let's just play through it and discuss. Right,
well, can I just give you one quick hypothetical on that measure, though, of why tariffs could be a good thing, since it won't be relevant in the future?
Okay.
Robotics. Mm-hmm. Who's to stop a company fully implementing robotics in another country and building everything for no labor costs?
Mm-hmm. That's going to happen, probably.
And energy. Yep. And raw
material.
A lot
of jobs are going to be automated.
So that would, you know, and then just flooding the market with cheap products that way. Even with So who's to say tariffs wouldn't be a bad thing then, too? I mean, to block these companies from totally shockwave in the economy. And, you know, it might be a process too. Even tariff could lower the shockwave of the coming in roboticide, you know, purely mechanical operations that are going to take over everything.
Yeah, maybe in the future that's a big political problem, and maybe something we could talk about is the jobless economy. Most people aren't going to have traditional jobs, and you know, even within our lifetime, a lot of things are going to be automated. And that's going to be a significant political challenge, I think. But I'll play through the rest of this clip.
In Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, the Brexit states. You live here in Ohio. You know what I'm talking about. whether Trump means it or not is kind of irrelevant because he's saying the things to people who are hurting. And it's why every beaten down, nameless, forgotten working stiff who used to be part of what was called the middle class loves Trump. He is the human Molotov cocktail that they've been waiting for. The human hand grenade that they can legally throw into the system that stole their lives from them. And on November 8th, Election Day, although they've lost their jobs, although they've been foreclosed on by the bank, next came the divorce, and now the wife and kids are gone, the car's been repoed, they haven't had a real vacation in years, they're stuck with the shitty Obamacare bronze plan where you can't even get a fucking Percocet. They've essentially lost everything they had, except one thing. The one thing that doesn't cost them a cent and is guaranteed to them by the American Constitution, the right to vote. They might be penniless, they might be homeless, they might be fucked over and fucked up. It doesn't matter.
Because listen, Kirk,
it's equalized on that day. A millionaire has the same number of votes as the person without a job. One. And there's more of the former middle class than there are in the millionaire class. So on November 8th, the dispossessed will walk into the voting booth, be handed a ballot, close the curtain, and take that lever or felt pen or touchscreen and put a big fucking X in the box by the name of the man who has threatened to upend and overturn the very system that has ruined their lives, Donald J. Trump. They see that the elites who ruined their lives hate Trump. Corporate America hates Trump. Wall Street hates Trump. The career politicians hate Trump. The media hates Trump after they loved him and created him and now hate him. Thank you, media. The enemy of my enemy is who I'm voting for on November 8th. Yes, on November 8th, you, Joe Blow, Steve Blow, Bob Blow, Billy Bob Blow, all the Blows.
All the Blows.
Get to go and blow up the whole goddamn system because it's your right. Trump's election is going to be the biggest fuck you ever recorded in human history. And it will feel good.
Oh my gosh, can you see that juice?
I thought that was pretty surprising coming from Michael Moore.
To me, it's not that surprising. You know, being that, I think it's pretty clear that a lot of Donald Trump's policies are very progressive and liberal. And I would argue tariffs are definitely that. He's very anti-free market when he's coming in against trade agreements and, you know, more of a globalization initiative. Like, that's a boogeyman, and he's very much into sovereign or local independence with utilizing tariffs and that type of thing. And I think there have been some preliminary numbers thrown out there. If he's elected, our deficit will expand substantially more than it would under Clinton because of the type of initiatives or financial initiatives that he's going to use to boost the economy, to support the lower middle class. So it's very much, like you're saying, Kirk, a populist movement, and I would argue it's a very progressive populist movement. And I kind of look at people who are quote-unquote conservative or libertarian, they support something like that, and I just give him the stink eye. I'm like, are you being real?
Well,
about this?
I still want to challenge you on that a little bit, though, if possible, because.
And we're coming up on an hour, by the way.
All right. In my opinion, I just view tariffs as more of it's anti-free market in a world sense, in a globalist sense, but in a nation state, it can be more of a free market for the nation itself.
It can, but
That's why I would say that's the more conservative measure, that it may, that I don't think that it's taking, like, some of these studies. I would have to look at the study, but just
here's my question. So if let's say we have Donald Trump putting these 35% tariffs to Mexico, to China, Dominican Republic, whatever, will those countries want to trade with us?
Trust me, they have to.
They don't have to.
Well, here's the other thing, though. It's scary to have someone just say that they're going to put a 35% tariff on a business just because they, you know.
I mean, this is all hypothetical. Yeah.
But that, to me, that's the more worrisome, let alone the fact that if tariffs are really going to be good or bad. Because in the grand scheme of things, it's just another government program where you can talk if it's right or wrong, but in the long run, there's more unintended consequences, in my opinion, than, like Eric's talking about, a truly free market and voluntary society.
But. Yeah, there are a lot of... It's just too bad we don't have a good libertarian candidate in play, like Rand Paul.
We really had a good opportunity for this time around, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So maybe I should tell a story real quick. Earlier today, I overheard a conversation and about an individual that had this politician, local house rep, maybe last name ends or begins with Paul.
Okay. First name, the three Eric. Of us can put that together.
And this guy, I'm overhearing it. He's a business owner. I couldn't exactly hear what exactly he owned, but he had a lot of stories. And apparently, he had a little fundraiser for Pulse. Afterwards, everyone had a little too much wine, he was saying, and afterwards, he cornered him and he wanted to know what his true take about Trump was. And the true politician, and what it sounded like was that he, you know, kind of never gave a non answer. But the host said, you know, well, I cannot vote for Hillary, but my conscience won't allow me to vote for Trump either. And went into a bunch of things. And the next day, so-called individual did a press release and said the exact same thing. I can't vote for Hillary, but I can't vote for Trump because of my conscience. I won't allow it. And that guy was really proud of that. I just found it a funny take on politics right there. Almost verbatim in the following days, you know. And, you know, you never know. With the guy did say that he doesn't drink much and he was a little lit up that night. And he might have thought he thought of that himself, too. You never know. But I don't know, it's funny how I see a lot of people are really against Trump, but at the same time I just want to challenge them on it and what is their true purpose. Is it really a liberty minded sense, or is it just the wrong kind of government control?
I would err on the side of the second. It's more big government. And he does have, Ron Paul has said this at times on his show, The Liberty Report, which is very good. I would suggest, you know, if you can watch it, it's out pretty much every day. It's about 20 minutes long on YouTube. But he's kind of, you know, he's alluded to the fact that, you know, he's got some good foreign policy things that he throws out once in a while, some things on the Fed that he throws out, like the Fed is not apolitical. And I think, you know, Janet Yellen is not apolitical, and that it's not a bad idea to deal with countries diplomatically rather than through the use of coercion or military force or intelligent agencies trying to topple governments or, you know, be intrusive. There's elements of that Trump throws out there that are kind of libertarian. They're a good, you know, it's a good idea, you know, be diplomatic rather than utilize the military-industrial complex and things like that. But, you know, for the most part, Trump is a big government neoconservative, and you know, he uses rhetoric that he's against the establishment and everything, but he's very, you know, he's very progressive and populist and will go to the government. And certainly against that, in the context of Hillary, against that in the context of Trump, and really against his protectionist policy, I think is very damaging. And there's been, and that's been illustrated, you know, in my industry, I work in tech or IT, almost without fail, all leaders within the IT industry, which is the driver of this economy, more and more in the world economy, are very much against the Trump presidency because of his protectionist policies, cutting down on H-1B visas coming over here because of the fact that you don't have an educated enough populace here to take those jobs. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, his economic policy, I think, will not be beneficial. And I cannot vote for somebody who you know, espouses that.
But that would be... how about this? How about if Trump is elected next Tuesday, I think he needs libertarians right off the bat to be a voice in his ear. We haven't seen a president more pliable to the libertarian mindset, and that libertarians need to jump with him as soon as possible to give him help him be advisors instead of shunning him and being painted as the same people that have tried to block Trump the whole way, to hopefully help him, give him reason to enact libertarian ideals. And I think that's the best chance that America has seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, I completely disagree. It's a straw man argument. He's saying that you're voting in somebody who's basically unintelligent and uninformed on policy, and therefore he's malleable. I know there are a lot of government agencies, the military, you know, intelligence agencies that are supporting him because of that, because he's uninformed, uneducated in policy and technical, you know, actually how to implement it. So he's, you know, viewed as malleable, but I think that's a weak argument. Voting for a leader who's not educated.
I'm not making it as an argument. Yeah. I'm saying that he's going to win, and I think it's better for libertarians to jump on it and try and be on the side to lean him in the right direction, because there's a lot of libertarians that are behind him. And I think he knows it, and he speaks to it here and there.
I don't know.
A lot of it isn't, but there's a lot of parts that are.
Yeah.
And I think the libertarians are going to make a bad mistake in trying to just totally shun him worse than anyone else right away and put him in the same category as George Bush or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Because in my opinion, it turns into a globalist two-party system that feeds on itself. And this Donald Trump is a candidate to actually have some form of change. And
so is Barack
Obama.
I
just hope to see it. I'm curious and hopeful, but I doubt it, like you say, Eric. But I think there's a far greater percent chance than any other person that we've seen run in a long time.
Danny, what say you? Let's wrap this up in a few minutes.
How about predictions?
Well, predictions, huh?
Next week, predictions.
I still think Hillary's gonna win. That's my answer.
I wouldn't be surprised if Trump wins. Actually, it seems like I think Hillary's gonna win, but I don't think it's no longer as long of a shot as it was even a couple weeks ago. It is really interesting to see whatever that is going on with all these dumps, you know, towards Clinton. I have no idea. I don't even pretend to know what entity is originating this stuff against her. It could be, I mean, I'm sure you guys have got your thoughts, and there are a lot of other people that do, but there are definitely people that don't want her elected, and they're trying very hard to make sure that she isn't elected. But I suppose that goes the same for Trump, right? So...
Right, just like Kirk said, like my conscience won't allow him. Well, my conscience just can't vote for him.
Yeah,
except for Paul Ryan, though. So,
well, people say that, but do you think their conscience can elect a criminal at the same time?
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Danny? Before we wrap it up.
No, I think that's. I think it'll be just kind of interesting to see what the outcome is like on Tuesday. So, yeah. So I'll be going out to vote. Hope Eric. I hope you are. Kirk. I hope you change your mind. So, yeah. Go Tuesday. Go whoever. Forget it. I don't even care, really.
You almost talked yourself into it.
No, I'll vote. I'm with you, Danny. I'll vote. You also have the option not to vote for, you can go out and vote if there's one, specific spot you don't want to vote for, don't vote for it. I mean, the way that I do things is if I'm not educated about the race, I don't vote. So that kind of applies to some further down ticket races. If I don't know, I'm not going to, participate.
Yeah, essentially I'm just turning in an empty ballot. That's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah. You're sort of voting. Yeah.
It's a vote. All right. Whether they count or not, I don't give a crap.
What if your vote just gets switched internally?
That could be some fanatic.
Here we go again.
There's never a rigged election, is there, Kirk?
Never. Don't even bring it up, man. I can't believe you do such a thing.
Doesn't happen. Nobody talks about it. Nobody threatens to not abide by the election. That just
doesn't
exist. Not happen. Does not. All right. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 56. Hope we did some good things. Talk to you guys later.
Over and out.
Adios, mofo.